and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
All righty, welcome aboard to another episode of Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio with Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner, and Heidi Thompson, it says here, Financial Advisor and RICP. Welcome aboard, one and all.
Thank you for listening. For those of you who are, we certainly appreciate it, and we have lots to talk about today, Ron. Yes.
I'm looking at Heidi's notes here. Very interesting topic, it looks like.
I think so. 19 things rich people rarely do. Now, 19 things rich people rarely do, and we're actually going to... Boy, I sound really echoey in this. Is that how I should sound? Yeah. Okay, great. So
it's because we're up so high.
Is that it? Because
yeah.
We're standing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what keeps us safe. I forgot about that. And actually, we are standing, for those of you who can't see us. But we're also going to be having Shay and I think today doing her Shay stats, which is kind of a fun alliteration. And then Ron was telling us just before the show that the new studio is a little bit slower than anticipated, but we're going to be in by January of next year. Is that what you were saying?
That's pretty safe, yes.
No, actually, I think you said June 1st is the hoped-for date. You bet. Well, we'll look forward to it. And thank you to all of you who listen, to all of you who've been in touch with us, especially here recently. We've been hearing a lot from folks, and it's really, we're having fun counseling with people, and we've been extremely busy, as our staff will attest to. But we're pivoting here, and it's been great. It's been interesting. So Heidi and I are going to kind of weigh in together on this article, and she's going to be talking about
solo 401k plans
and why the IRS may be coming after solo 401k plans. So 19 things rich people really do. Now, why do we have a problem with the word rich? They're rich. They're rich. Why do we? Why do we have a problem with
and
that?
And rich means different things to different people, too.
Well, to be sure, we are rich here in the United States versus the rest of the world. I did hear the stats. I was not able to confirm it here this morning that the top 1% of all wealth is held in the world is held here in the United States.
Wow.
And the average middle class person here in the United States is by far wealthier than anyone else in the world. I think that's a generalization enough that we can all grasp onto, that a lot of wealth is held here in the United States, and our middle class, compared to the rest of the world, is incredibly wealthy as well. So rich can mean different things to different people. Some people might define that as having $1 million in net worth. Some people might define that as having $4 million, you know, whatever that number is. But it tends to mean millions in net worth. So how did these people get it, and why do we have such a problem? Would we call it blame? B, I wrote these out. A was blame. B was jealousy. We're jealous, possibly, of those who've gained that. One article that Shay had mentioned, it actually said, if you want to become rich, don't hate the rich. Well, what could that mean? That could mean that you actually opened your mind up to how many of the people who gained wealth actually achieved it. Okay. D, you don't have the attitude necessarily, and there's Shay, hello.
Oh.
He or she just got lucky. Okay. They got lucky by doing what? We've all heard that. They worked like crazy to make the luck happen.
They say the harder you work, the luckier you get.
That is still true today. E, some of us have a given mistrust toward those who gain wealth. I recall growing up watching the show Dallas. A really kind of a slimy show in retrospect. But I actually kind of enjoyed it because J.R. Ewing was the people everybody loved to hate on that program.
Who shot J.R.?
Right.
Yeah. That was huge. The whole summer we had to wait and wonder who shot J.R. But isn't that crazy? I got a lot of unsubstantiated facts and notions about what wealth was from that show.
A lot of misconceptions there.
Misconceptions. That's the word I wanted. Thank you. And as a matter of fact, I was listening. Pardon me one moment, please. I was listening. When I first started in the business, this was back in 1985, I knew I had a long way to go. So I had my degree from Central Michigan University in business and had several good teachers there. But I had a lot of misconceptions about what wealth was and how to get from point A to point B in success in the industry. And I was starting at point zero. I actually moved up, my wife and I moved up here from Mount Pleasant area, she being originally from up here. And I started with Paul Sutherland back in January of 85, getting all my licenses and all that stuff. And I remembered, as I was thinking about this program like it was yesterday, actually listening to a Brian Tacy tape series through Nightingale Conant. So I was introduced to Nightingale Conant, and I spent... for me, what was a significant amount of money getting these tapes to listen to, because I spent a lot of time on the road about these things, and was thinking about a business trip that I was taking to go over to the West Branch area, and listening to him talk about the attitudes of the wealth and the proper thinking to think through this, and literally... As he was talking, I was so frustrated at all of my misconceptions about wealth and wealthy people and their attitudes and how hard they worked and the vision and the focus that they had, that literally tears were coming down my cheeks, honest to God. So those misconceptions were not all blown away at that point in time, but significant change to my own attitude about what it takes. And I have seen it again and again and again in those people, clients who come in who have wealth, and some people would say significant wealth. So here's number one. Why do we have such a hard time with that word? Number two, giving. Number two, they never stay at the same level. If you want to be rich, you cannot be content with the status quo. You need to keep aiming high or higher. Does that make sense? Most of us didn't get into business to peak and stay there. It doesn't have to necessarily be into business. It could be inventions. The perpetual climb. Many embrace that ideal. For instance, this quote is, you make a million, you want 10, perhaps, or you want to continue to achieve. This is actually from ReadersDigest.com, Work and Career. Number two, they never act stingy. Rich people should celebrate their successes. Not all of them do. Now, obviously, not all rich people are wonderful people. There are jerks who are rich, and there are jerks who are poor. We all get that. All right.
But I think in that case, too, if you become successful, you appreciate other people who are working hard and good service and yes. and things that you want to recognize because you've been there yourself. So
if you've had to work that hard to get there, it tends to create a thankfulness, if you will, and the ability to share with others and see and how you might share with others to do things you don't have the time to get done. Being stingy might save you a few bucks in the short term, but certainly won't help you feel good about your fortune long term and or help. It's not just feeling good about your fortune. It's about helping you keep it in perspective. Isn't that what we all need? That it's not all about the money, of course. They tend to have mentorship. Millionaires are very successful because they had a good idea or are cunning business people. Obviously, they're not. But rarely do the achievements rely solely on one person. Usually, it's a group or a team that helps guide them. The team we have at Prout, we call it the Level 10, is phenomenal in going back and forth. Okay, what are we trying to achieve here? What are the goals? Remembering those on a weekly basis. We spend 2 to 3 hours on it, going through what we're trying to accomplish, how we're doing it, how we're doing as we go along. All those things, measuring success. It's consistency, yes.
Yeah, and I would add that asking questions, having that mentor and pursuing them to find out how'd you do that? How do you do that? I like what you did there. How did that work? Being proactive on that side to find out the information.
Being open to hear the answer, possibly, even though it goes against your preconceived notions. And for those who inherited it, they inherit a unique set of responsibilities if they're going to keep it. Usually most wealth is gone in the second generation for those who inherit it because they don't get the amount of hard work that it took. But for those that do, kudos. It takes a lot of work to keep it. Yes.
I would say when I used to do the entrepreneur show on WTCM, met a lot of business owners of all sizes.
Sure.
One thing I realized was consistent. All of them want to help other people achieve success. Business owners help other business owners, Chamber of Commerce. If you say, I'm out here to try to accomplish something, there was oodles of people lined up to help you. And when I've mentored a few young people, I always tell them, if you're trying to do well and work hard and get ahead, people will want to help you. And the wealthy, obviously,
they do.
Do that.
If you're willing to lay down the gauntlet, it's amazing how many people will encircle you. And that reminds me of when I made the commitment to Jill 36 years ago. It's incredible how many, 36, 37, almost 38 now. Sorry, I'm 2 years
He's
behind.
He's doing the math.
Yeah, 1983,
get that right.
To be sure.
Get that one right.
I get that one right, Dennis. It was amazing to me to think about the number of people that gathered around and supported us in that commitment. And they still do today. They all agree. He's crazy. Good luck, Jill. So whatever. So they never focus on the money and not on what they love. The key to true success is doing what you love. So focus on that. Almost 70% of lottery winners end up broke in 7 years.
Woo.
70% in 7 years.
Jeez.
Went up broke. Yes. Yes.
I just wanted to say this is a great one because if you work at your passion and you love what you're doing, it's so much easier. I've had jobs that I did not like that I just did because I needed a job and you know this one fit where I was at the time. But you know, when I look back at that and like what I do today, I mean, I have such a passion for my work every day and it just makes it so much easier and you don't have to keep encouraging yourself because it's already there.
It's fun. Yeah. It's cool. It's fun to be a part of. You know, when others share that as well. Next, they tend to love their job, which kind of goes along with this.
Yeah.
86% of people who liked their job had a net worth around $3.6 million. The 7% who said they loved their jobs were worth almost double that. So perhaps $7 million. Good point there, Heidi.
Yeah, I got a ways to go.
don't we all? So next, they don't believe in fate. Most rich people think it takes some good old hard work to earn the cash. Only 10% of wealthy people say they believe in fate, while 90% of poor believe the opposite. Really? 90% believe in fate. Well, there can be some fatefully good things that happen. obviously along the way. However, if you continue to work at that specialty and have a goal to continue to get better at it, what did they say? What did Ben Franklin say? The man, or woman, who pours their purse into their heads makes the very best investment. The very best. Well, you know, it could have been Tesla a year ago. That could have been, you know, a shining star for a while. But the very best investment over time is pouring your purse into your own head. How can I learn more? How can I get better? What do I need to do? Can I be open to spending some money at getting that done? So, because if I'm spending some money at getting better, I'm going to tend to only get better as well. Well, how could that help me in my job? I have no idea right now. Dennis, don't even talk. I really don't get it. Start thinking about it. And what could that mean? Would you be open to buying another book on how to improve yourself? Or a book that maybe pushes your buttons? Okay, the way I was thinking about that was, can we just say it? It was wrong. The way I was thinking about that, and or those people who are rich. Oh, that's so disgusting. See, so the politicization, if you will, of the word rich today is really destructive to those who want to achieve. Why are we so against someone who wants to achieve? Well, because then it points up, and I'll just say it, our own unwillingness to try to achieve that success ourselves. I can say that because it's true of me sometimes still. Because if they're pushing that hard, well, why aren't I pushing that hard to get that much better? See?
And you don't have to desire to be rich, but if you do, if you say, you know, I really want to have more or I want to be a millionaire, then you're saying you have to be purposeful. If you leave it to fate, chances are it won't work out.
It's not going to happen.
So these are all things people do proactively.
There's nothing the matter with having that as a goal. Of course, as long as the other goals of life and happiness are there as well. Yeah. Because as Mr. Collins said, it was a lot about his family. So he realized who got him to the dance.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fame. It wasn't landing on the moon in the end at all. Never believe in fate. Next, they never watch too much TV.
Aha.
Money isn't going to come pouring in if you go on a binge watch Netflix show. 67% of wealthy individuals say they watch less than an hour a day. Less than an hour. God darn, what did they do with their time? I mean, seriously. Instead of wasting time on the couch, they're learning as much as they possibly can about an area of interest and becoming experts. Okay. They always have a to-do list. Next. Getting distracted is a surefire way to not get the wealth and or success you may want. So staying task-oriented is key. What are the key components? And possibly, if you really want to turn it into a logic thing, what are the A/1 things I need to get done today? Well, I need to cover or call these two people because if I let these two go on the whole day long, it's going to bug me and sit in the back of my head all day long. So I'm going to get those two done first, as an example. What do you need to do today to get started? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't like this. Resist setting goals. They set goals on a continuing basis. Let's just say it that way. They set goals. I'm not sure what difference that'll make setting goals. You'll be shocked, especially if you review them on a consistent basis. Write them out. It's almost weird what happens. Well, some goals may be very simple. I'd like to learn how to move better. I'm stiff, you know, when I get up in the morning. Okay, that's kind of simple. What would it take? Well, I guess I could learn to stretch some more. Or maybe I'd learn to spend 5 minutes a day. So you get it. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be huge. So that to-do list and the goal setting. 70% of wealthy people follow at least one major goal a year. 70%. Without the big vision, everything could fall apart, and that equals less cash coming in. So having those goals, what is the goal for not only myself, but for me and my family? What about spiritually as well? Mm-hmm. You know, church, companions that help along the way, fellowship, all of the rest of it. Huge.
I like that. That big goal each year, because you know a lot of us. I mean, life is busy, and you got a lot of stuff going on. So you're focusing on all the little stuff in front of you that you have to get done today or next week. But I like that big goal a year because you lift your head up and you push yourself forward to the next thing. And,
the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal. What would that be?
But and for some people, they might be overwhelmed. Say, I could never get that or do that. But you start with, like you make a path. If I want, I'm here and I want to get to the big goal, yes. What will it take? And then there are your mini goals, step by step.
It's incredible, Ron. I mean, it is so empowering. So who are the people? Who are this? Or what are the situations? What are the steps that I would have to take to turn this into smaller steps? Well, I'd like to write an article. Okay, about what, you know? Well, or like Ron Jolly, I'd like to write a book. That's impossible. Now, how long, if you would, Ron, that Northern Michigan book, there was something you wrote about Northern Michigan some time ago. How long did that take you approximately?
I believe it was about 14 months.
14 months.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it probably felt almost insane. In fact, a while back you were talking about the conversation you had, was it with the publishing company or something?
Yeah.
They wanted you to do this, or if you would, go into some detail, please.
They gave me 6 months. Well, first they said, put together a proposal. We want you to do a book about facts about Northern Michigan.
Okay.
And I said, well, I don't know how to make a proposal. And they go, well, just do an outline. And I did an outline, and they said, hey, you got it. They gave you a contract. They want it done in 6 months.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and I said, okay. So I wasted a lot of time because I thought I'll start from the beginning, and I researched, like, the first signs of humans in northern Michigan. And,
you didn't start back at Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Not
but
quite
you started
that far.
With humanity, okay.
Yes. But anyway, it's just, I had an outline, so that was my goal. That was my list of goals. I need to round out this chapter.
Okay.
And I kept going, and I thought, well, we're coming up against the deadline, and the publisher would say, well, that's good. Just keep going. We'll be a little bit late. And they kept pushing it off and pushing it off. And
so they worked with you.
Well, they were. They made me work. No, but
yeah, there was you had a second job at that point, in essence.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. And I found out later, my wife, my lovely wife, Laura, was, I wasn't even aware of it, but she was not happy that I spent so much time on this. I mean, I did it all day when I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a learning experience. But it was a series of small goals with one big goal at the end.
So it was a sacrifice for Laura as well as a part of this.
Absolutely.
It really was.
Yep. And she helped, too, take pictures and do a little research. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about getting my certified private wealth advisor designation.
Me and, too.
Were you? Okay, great. Let's talk about it. So that was actually toward the end of 18, I started considering it, and I agreed with a consultation with Heidi and Nathan and other staff at work that, okay, it makes sense. Just consulting. And I got signed up for it, and then COVID happened, and they had to push back the date to I could take a test. And finally, Escanaba turned up where I could take the test up. And Escanaba in the moonlight, don't you know?
Yeah.
So I said, well, I don't know how it's going to happen, but we're just going to have to set the date because obviously it's open now. And I'm not going to get it done unless the date's set. So we all recognize our own weaknesses. So what we did is we scheduled basically 10 days before the test, 10 days, almost 2 weeks. Before the test, when I would take all my time, because I'd been studying as I went along, but I knew I was going to have to get really ready for this test because it was, I don't know, 6 hours of insanity, intense. And it was given through Yale, and the amount of information was crazy. So I remember starting that week and feeling like, honestly, I'm climbing a mountain. So from basically sun up to well past sundown, every day, I was in the books, studying, taking the notes, seeing what I didn't know, trying to be as critical as I could. Given the videos and all the rest, it was incredibly helpful, but I was at it. And as the week wore on, I could start to see the light. And then by the time I took the test, of course, I passed. So all of these things, when you set them out in the beginning, may seem, they always have an impossibility to them. They always, and we will self-talk. I will do this. Self-talk ourselves into, what will my friends think? My family, how do I keep them on board with this insanity that I'm doing, I'm spending all this time doing? Are they good with this? So you have to bring other people with you, but they will cheer you many times as you go along. And it's amazing what you can achieve once you set your mind to it. So they hold fear at bay. They hold fear at bay. We got to take a break, don't we?
We shall take a break here. But this is great. It's really, in light of all the discussions, it's encouraging. It's optimistic. It's uplifting.
Wonderful.
So we'll get back.
We love it.
Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson in from Prout Financial Design with New Retirement Radio. We'll be right back. At WTCM, welcome back to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by Prout Financial Design. Dennis Prout is in with Heidi Thompson, and we welcome to the studio Shay Pataja, the Chief Experience Officer for Prout Financial Design.
Well, great to have you back in the studio.
This is cozy.
First time in, like, yeah, it is a little
tight. Hey, Ron.
Yeah. Up close and personal.
Hello!
Yeah, well, I haven't read these live in a while, so this is going to be interesting, but I'll go ahead and give it a shot. You ready?
Yes.
The S&P 500 was up 6.2% total return in the first quarter of 2021, the 42nd time the index has gained at least a 6% in a calendar quarter since 1990, 42 out of the 125 quarters. The index has gained an average of 11.6% total return in the 12 months following a calendar quarter that was up at least 6%. Dennis, interpretation, please. And that's from BTN Research.
Say that one more time.
I lost the advisor. What does that mean? I'll read the next one.
No.
You want to read it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please do it.
The S&P 500 was up 6.2% total return in the first quarter of 2021, the 42nd time the index has gained at least 6% in a calendar quarter since 1990. So that's 42 out of 125 quarters.
Yeah. So not being invested over time is probably not a good idea because you're usually going to be wrong. Now, sometimes you'll be right.
You will be wrong.
Once in a while, you'll be correct. But the number of times you would have been wrong, don't come close to the number of times you would have been right. Okay. Well, what if it's different this next 10 years? Okay, it could be. But a lot of things could be different, right?
All right. All right, here's another one from BTN Research. The S&P was up 56.4% total return for the 12 months ending March 31st of 2021, the eighth time the index has gained at least 40% over any 12-month period since 1990.
Isn't that radical? So just when everybody thought the wheels are falling off, the end is near. Now, that was, March of 20. It was so long ago. The market was down
like
about 35% in 6 weeks from mid-February to the end of March. And as Shay had that stat some time ago, April was the best month we'd seen in 30 years. The best month.
Well, April is a great month. Don't you agree, Heidi?
Oh, totally.
Totally. She's
April,
giving a big
Fool's
nod
Day,
over
April
there.
1st. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the things in April's.
Thank you, Jim and Shannon.
Mm-hmm. Well, as of April 15th, speaking of that date, 2021, only one out of every 13,000 fully vaccinated Americans contracted the COVID-19 virus after receiving their shots. Only one out of every 13,000 fully vaccinated Americans.
Really? One out of 13,000? Now, does anybody know what percentage that is? I'm just curious. What is that, about 0.00001%?
That's pretty good odds.
That's pretty good odds.
Pretty good odds, Heidi says. Yeah. That's from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Mm-hmm. All right, so this one is a little long, but stick with me because there's a theme. Households that received the stimulus payments via the March 2020 CARES Act spent 29% of the funds on consumption, as opposed to paying down debt, investing, or saving the money.
Well, that's the biggest teddy bear I've ever seen. Wow.
I have seen cars with that teddy bear sticking their head out. I'm like, that's going to be bad when it snows. Households that received the stimulus payments via the December 2020 relief legislation spent 26% of the funds on consumption. And those that received the stimulus payments in March of 2021 spent 25% on the funds on consumption, Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Bank balances are pretty high, and there's a lot of pent up spending we're going to see here in the coming months.
All right, next. The government projected in September of 2019 that our nation's tax gap, the difference between what all taxpayers should have paid compared to what they actually paid, was $441 billion per year. On April 13th of 2021, the IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig testified before the Senate Finance Committee that the tax gap could be as high as $1 trillion annually, or more than double the previous estimate. That's from the IRS.
No comment.
I know. We'll just let that one. We'll let that one live on the paper. The average U.S. state receives 48% of its tax revenue from sales tax, 41% from income taxes, 6% from license taxes, and 5% from other taxes.
That's the state of Michigan? Sorry.
State of Michigan? Average U.S.
Average U.S.
We're doing the averages here.
I do know that the state of Michigan charges, if you're late on your income tax with the state of Michigan, that the penalty is almost 5% a month. Now, the IRS is at about 6% a year. So the state of Michigan is 10 times that amount for those of you who are considering being late on your state of Michigan payments. So they have a rate that would make the mob red with jealousy or green with envy. So the state of Michigan.
Yeah, you talking to me, huh?
There you go.
You talking to me?
So, right. They're charging an arm and a leg, as it were.
New York City tax officials are projecting a $1 billion reduction in property tax revenue to be collected in 2022 versus 2021, largely due to a drop in the market value of its apartments and commercial real estate. And that's from the New York City Independent Budget Office.
Gosh, I wonder why that is. You think everybody's moving out of New York City because their taxes are in the stratosphere?
Well, I mean, the amount of people moving here from cities because they don't want to deal anymore. And they can work from home.
For a lot of reasons.
Hey. How you doing?
Oh, yeah.
How you doing, huh? You talking to me? Hey. All right. We got another one here. The median sales price of existing homes sold in the United States was $329,100 in March of 2021, an all-time record both on nominal basis, not adjusted for inflation, and on an inflation-adjusted basis. And that's from the National Association of Realtors. I wonder what the median sales price is in Traverse City. I would guess higher.
I would too.
Maybe like close to 400,000.
It's right around there.
Is it?
Median, yeah.
It is still okay. Man, the numbers, from what I'm seeing, we're up 1 to 2% a month for real estate prices here in the Traverse City area, and given the realtors that I talk to, the end currently is still not in sight. Yeah.
All right, one more here. I just found this one interesting. Electrical vehicle sales represented 5% of all passenger car sales globally in 2020. That percentage is projected to increase to 26% in 2030 and 72% in 2040. And that source is from Statistica, which is actually harder to say than the actual stat. That's the Shea Stats for today.
Some awesome stats. Thank you, Shea.
You're welcome.
Take care of yourself. Thanks for coming in.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right.
That's it. Just bam. Just like a star. I come in and do your thing and leave. See you later.
All right. So next, we've got several things to discuss. We were talking about possibly needing to do a recorded show next week. But in some conversation here with Colleen just before the show, Colleen's actually going to come in and join us next week, and we're going to be talking about Social Security next week. Social Security. Sure, yeah. I can say that. Social Security. Yes. All right.
I think we had an announcement, too, about Impact 100 that you wanted to...
Oh, yeah. See, I wonder which is... So, Impact 300.
300.
Way to go, Impact 100, Traverse City. In 2021, they will be awarding, and Heidi is part of this group, so why don't you go ahead and make this announcement.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I participated in the call last week when they announced how many... members they have, and the amount of grants that the organization is can give is based on the number of members, because each member donates $1,000, and all of it goes into grants for some local charities and nonprofit groups. So I was a little nervous, I will say, before they made the announcement, because it's such a social-based group. You know, we get together. A lot of the draw is being able to interact and meet people from the community. And without having that platform and everything being online, which they made tremendous strides in using and leveraging that, I was so excited to see that they had gotten 330 members. So that's going to allow us to do three grants of $110,000 a piece. And hopefully, you know, it will go smoothly as we go through the summer, and we'll be able to get back together more and more. But I was just really excited that we were able to maintain that enthusiasm because it's really hard, you know, with COVID, when things are based on a social, and I know a lot of nonprofit groups struggle with that, because it's a big fundraising arm. So I was just really excited, and I really like this group because everything goes back into the community, and it makes a, like the title says, a big impact, because it's a big gift, and things can move ahead.
And it's a rigorous process that any nonprofit has to get through to get that grant.
Yes.
Lots of applications, of course. 110 for three of them. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow, huge. All right, next in our notes, they control their fear. The wealthy. Any motivational speaker will say that fear is the enemy to us all. It prevents us from living our best and happiest life. It also stops you from getting wealthy. Some other points here, but they control their fear. Control the fear. Next, they never let emotions get in the way. When you allow your emotions to run high, you are literally turning off half of your brain, wrote wealth creation expert Thomas Corley. The prefrontal cortex, your brain, shuts down when your emotions, good or bad, are allowed to run wild. So keep control of those emotions, whether it's anger, fear, frustration, whatever it is. Particularly bad thing when you experience defeat or setbacks. Guess what? Part of the deal.
Yeah.
Because that is when you need your entire brain to help you to overcome defeat and the setbacks that naturally occur as a part of it. It is almost part of the price to pay. Next, or probably my favorite one, they never go with the flow. You might be jealous of those Instagram famous travel bloggers who seem to simply follow their intuition, but that attitude won't get you rich. According to Brendan Burchard, to become a high net worth individual, it's all about forming productive habits. He's been known to hang out with society's wealthiest, so he knows what he's talking about. It pays to take a look and understand what it is you're trying to achieve, study that particular market or focus, and try when you can, and it makes sense for a lot of different reasons to go against the flow. Especially if you've done your research, spent your time on that. You know where the value is. Tend toward that. Next, maybe a surprise. They never eat junk food.
Wow.
Famous business coach and investor Tony Robbins believes, he says, eating right is the key to working his 16-hour days. Now, I don't really want to work 16 hours a day, but you'll need the energy or brain power to come up with those ideas. Eating correctly and right make a huge difference, obviously, toward that. helping keep that energy level high. Next, by the way, how much time? We good?
A little over a minute, about a minute.
Okay.
Yep.
So we got two more. They never skip the gym. Exercise has been proven to boost brain function, especially outdoors as well. They're finding now that it can really interrupt Alzheimer's and a variety of other diseases to the brain, that outdoor air is huge for our processing, our nervous systems. Incredible what outdoor air, birds, and all the rest do. We need those sounds, the natural, the fresh air, all of it. And then creativity. Many rich people are inherently big thinkers, but they also work at it. Both Bill Gates and Richard Branson are known to block out times on their days to create and focus on self-improvement. Self-improvement. And we'll hold off with that and call it a day.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.